Tom Kissingberry here. Nah, I'm just kidding. We don't have Tom Kissingberry money. It's just me, Peter Howard, and Jake Anderson meeting at the Dynasty Crossroads once a week for 30 minutes to talk about one player at a time. We look at the film with Jake, we talk about the analytics with me, and we try to come to a consensus. We do have a pretty cool theme song, though.
Peter crunches numbers, and Jake just grinds that tape. Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church, but I'ma keep tapping return. I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winners to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict, Russ and Brian are the names. Trade Addicts Pod, let's go.
I am Brian Haar, aka Meatloaf Wildcat, and I have a trading problem.
And I am Bobby Couch, and I also have a trading problem.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 108 of the Trade Addicts Podcast. It's your boy, Meatloaf Wildcat, Brian Haar. I am here tonight with our guest, Bobby Couch, friend of the show. We are missing Dynasty Outhouse tonight. Russ is not feeling well. He is under the weather. So we wish him a speedy recovery from what he's dealing with. And hopefully he'll be back next week to join us. But yes, welcome to the Trade Addicts Podcast. We are a member of the DLF family of podcasts. We are also a member of the brand new Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network, the DAP Network, with the Fantasy Timeline and the Dynasty Junkies. Pretty great group of guys on both of those shows. If you're not checking them out yet, do so. As far as today goes, we've got a pretty entertaining show, I think. We're going to do some listener questions, talk through a trade or two, talk about Devontae Parker and why everybody hates him, but we'll get to that in a minute. First things first, Bobby, how you doing, man? Welcome back to the Trade Addicts Pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. And I guess I've been making the rounds on the new DAP network since I just appeared on the Dynasty Junkies. I was lucky enough to be invited on by those two fine gentlemen. I guess Fantasy Timeline, hop in my DMs. You're up next. Haven't heard from you guys, so just waiting to hear because I'm around. But no, I am very happy to be on. It's always nice to be on with you guys. And last time I was going to be on the podcast, Russ literally gave me the excuse one day that he had to wash his hair. So I think he's just this headache thing. It may be an actual headache. It may be that he's just trying to avoid me.
Well, he's probably going to tell you that it's my fault or something. You know, I gave him a headache and he couldn't pod with us this evening. But no, we miss him. Hopefully he recovers here soon.
Yeah, and a speedy recovery, Russ. We're definitely thinking of you. But the show will go on, and Brian is a more than capable host in your place.
Thank you, Bobby. I will pay you after the show for saying that. I appreciate it. So normally when we have a guest on, we go through the interview process. Certainly don't have to do that with Bobby. Everybody knows who Bobby is. Been on our show a bunch of times. If you don't know, at Rekt Fantasy, R-E-K-E-D, Fantasy on Twitter. That is correct, right?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. Just double checking. So we're going to jump actually right into the news. We don't have a lot of news today, but we're going to go ahead and jump into it. So here's the news. So Bobby, Big Ben apparently is throwing a football, like actually throwing a football, not tossing it with his son. And there was a video posted today from his social media accounts of him throwing the ball, apparently, to Juju Smith-Schuster. I think Ryan Switzer was in the video. And he is clean shaven. So obviously the clean shaven thing doesn't have anything to do with fantasy football, but Ben being recovered potentially does. So let's talk about it for a minute. How are you taking this video? How are you taking this news?
You know, it's interesting. I remember a few years back when we saw Andrew Luck throwing that like Nerf football and everyone got super excited about that. And then I think it was pretty much like the year after that video came out, or maybe it was 2 years, but he retired pretty quickly after. So I'm not sure that I'm too excited with Big Ben in the back of my mind. So I know your other podcast that you're on is the Superflex Super Show, and one of your co-host or co-stars is Ethan Turner. And I've talked to him about Ben, and he is a doctor. For those who don't know, he is a physical therapist, and he's told me that he thinks, just from reports that he's read, that Ben's elbow is shot more than we think it is, and that really worries me. So watching him throw a football doesn't necessarily mean much to me. It's nice to see, but I am a little bit worried just because doctors that I trust are telling me that they think his elbow is more shot than we think it is.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the reaction I had too. It was kind of just pump the brakes. I mean, obviously, as a Steelers fan, I'm excited. I hope that Ben is able to recover and return to kind of pre-injury form. But we got to remember too, I mean, when Andrew Luck had his issues, he was a young man, you know, in comparison, right? I mean, still in his late 20s. You know, Ben is in his late 30s. So this is a major injury at that point in his career to his throwing arm. So yeah, I mean, I think we need to pump the brakes here. Certainly, I'm excited that he's throwing a football. That's good. That's the next step in the progression ladder. But I don't think we're really going to know until he's out there ripping it week one, whenever the NFL season ends up starting, or during training camp, you know. Wait till he gets hit a couple times, wait till he has to change his arm motion to, you know, avoid a defensive player from batting a ball down. You know, so I think we need to pump the brakes here. It's okay to get excited if you're a Steelers fan like me. But for fantasy purposes, I'm still fading Ben pretty hard. I really don't want anything to do with him. And it's not saying that he's not capable of putting together, you know, a decent fantasy season. It's just there's so much risk involved. I mean, he literally, if it gets hurt again, he's done. Like, his career's over, essentially. So I think for me, there are other options, you know, that, you know, I'd rather have Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, who maybe doesn't have quite the upside. He might. I mean, that's arguable, I guess, but if for fantasy purposes. But, you know, I'd rather have a guy like that, even though we know Tua is there and eventually going to be the guy there. You know, I think I would rather take the risk of Ryan Fitzpatrick getting replaced versus taking the risk that Ben might, you know, hurt himself halfway through the first game of the year and then it's over. So
I think I'd still take the risk on Ben there. I would worry a bit, though, also about the beard. And the reason I say that, and it's like half joking, half serious. So in baseball, and I apologize, I know this is a football podcast, but in baseball, CC Sabathia 1 year lost like a bunch of weight, right? And everyone's like, oh, he's in the best shape of his life. And then he couldn't throw his fastball anymore. And I think because basically the fat was just everything behind his fastball. And so I worry that like there's some magic power in beards. You mentioned Ryan Fitzpatrick. Dude has a glorious beard and we call him Fitz Magic, and he always seems to find a way to have some fantasy relevance. So Ben needs to get his beard back, or I'm just worried about him. I don't think he can be a good quarterback without the beard.
Well, the good news is he's got a couple of months here, right? So, you know, get through the heat of the summer, and then you get into the fall in September. Let that thing start to grow. I'm with you, Bobby. Let it grow. I'm a beard guy. So, yeah, let it grow. But he'll hopefully a couple months from now, I'm sure he'll be Shaggy Ben again. He's too lazy to keep that shaving stuff up. So, but we'll move along to our next news item. So Anthony Lynn.
Real quick, Brian. Sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
Just a random thought. And I know this has been talked about ad nauseum, but what if, you know, Cam Newton were to land with the Steelers as just technically an injury insurance policy for Ben, but probably with the idea that he would take over at some point, either during the season or next season. How would you feel about that as a Steelers fan?
I would absolutely love it. I would absolutely love it. And so here's the thing. I've been saying all along with the Steelers and their backup quarterback situation and succession plan or lack thereof. You know, there was talk Jameis Winston, right? There was talk that that was the perfect spot for Winston to land. Now Cam is like there was some rumblings about Andy Dalton. Now there's some rumblings about Cam being, you know, coming into the Steelers with the idea that he would take over after a year of Ben, essentially. I would absolutely love it as a fan. An MVP caliber quarterback who's still in his early 30s being able to step in there. First of all, provide insurance in case, right? Also, to be the successor there and give us a you know, the Steelers have a really good defense right now. Really good defense. So if you have a capable quarterback with a really good defense, even if it's not MVP Cam, if it's like half decent Cam, right? Then they're going to be in the conversation. They'll compete in the division. They probably can't catch the Ravens. I mean, we're going to get into the AFC North a little bit later too. We have a listener question about that, but you know, I don't think they can hang with the Ravens. I really don't. Not, we'll put it this way. I don't think they can beat the Ravens. I think they can give them games, but I don't think they can beat them.
I mean, the question is, can anyone in the NFL at this point really hang with the Ravens or beat the Ravens?
I think the Chiefs are the only ones, and yeah. It's just a matter of outscoring them. I mean, those are the best two teams in football right now, in my opinion.
I think the disappointment is that they're in the same conference because we should be having Super Bowls of Ravens versus Chiefs every year for like the next few years.
Yeah. Well, and it was that way for a long time too, with the Colts and the Patriots when it was Manning and Brady, and you know, we had Drew Brees, prime Drew Brees on the other side, and Aaron Rodgers. And so there were, it's not like, you know, it was better back then. We had a little more of an even split on the conferences, but yeah, definitely. Those are definitely, I think, the best two teams in football right now. I still think the Niners are pretty good. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, I'm not overly sold that he's the guy there like long-term, but he's also capable. And again, I just talked about, you know, really good defenses with capable quarterbacks. And I think that's the case. It's, you know, if it's not Patrick Mahomes on the other side, they win the Super Bowl, essentially. I mean, most likely. Right. So, you know, so the Niners are in the conversation.
Or even if Garoppolo just makes that one throw to Emmanuel Sanders, they win the Super Bowl.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. So, you know, I for me with the Steelers and Cam, I would absolutely love it. I don't think they're going to do it, and I think it just comes down to money. Even if he's willing to take a 1 or 2 year, like a 1 year deal for $5 million or $10 million or whatever it is, I don't think the Steelers are going to pay that. I just don't think they're going to pay it, even though I think they should.
Yeah, the other problem is any team that signs Cam, and I think this is part of the reason that he's unsigned, there's going to be a media controversy about quarterbacks and who the starting quarterback is, and you're gonna have to deal with that, and that might upset Ben if you're the Steelers. Or, you know, I've even said that I think the Broncos should sign him, and I still think that the Broncos should sign him, but then you have questions about, oh, do they not believe in Drew Luck, or what's the deal there? So anywhere Cam goes, he can't really just go in and be a fade into the background backup quarterback. There's going to be media attention that follows that. And so I kind of get why he's unsigned, but at the same time, just having watched him throughout his career, I don't, because he's so much better than pretty much every team's backup that I feel like every team should be coming calling at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it is, I mean, it is perplexing that he isn't, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable that he's not on a roster. I mean,
he's going to take an injury. Something's going to happen in either camps or early in the season, and then a team is immediately going to go.
Going to sign him. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. So speaking of Cam, beautiful segue, Bobby. See, that's why you make the rounds, and that's why we just continue to have you back on the DAP network. That was a beautiful setup. We're going to roll right back into some more Cam talk. So our other piece of news, Anthony Lynn, the head coach of the Chargers, comes out and says that they had been extremely interested in signing Cam Newton. And this is after they draft Justin Herbert. So thoughts on this and thoughts on confidence level with the Chargers moving forward with Herbert?
Yeah, I think it would be as a one-year sort of thing. It basically, I don't think it's a comment so much on Herbert, although Herbert wasn't my favorite in this class. I think he did land in a great situation. but I think it's more a comment on Tyrod Taylor, unfortunately, of, you know, we've seen Tyrod be a starter. He's been okay. He was pretty solid in Buffalo. After Buffalo, he's been all right. But I really don't know. I think it's more a comment on him. And if they were to sign Cam, he would presumably be the starter and turn it over to Herbert maybe next year. So it might also be a comment of them saying they don't think Herbert is pro ready yet. But I don't think it's a long-term worry for Herbert. I think it's more like, hey, we have, because if you look at the Chargers, they have a really good set of pieces on offense. They actually are really well set at defense too. So if you get a guy in there who can play average to better than average quarterback, they're probably a playoff team too. And so I think they're looking at that and going, is Tyrod Taylor a playoff quarterback? Probably not. Is Cam Newton, even at, you know, 50 to 75% of Cam Newton, a playoff quarterback? Yeah, probably. So I think that's it. And also, as I said, maybe there's some concern of, hey, Herbert's not fully pro ready. But, you know, I think we've been spoiled by the past few classes of these rookie quarterbacks coming in and starting pretty much right away. And there's been stuff that's shown, you know, over X number of years, first round picks generally start with an average, I think it was, of 5 games. But there was the older times where you had guys like Aaron Rodgers sitting for 3 years or other guys who needed some development time. And I don't think that's that crazy to think maybe Herbert needs some of that development time.
What, so, do you think, Brian? Yeah, no, I agree. I think the thing for me is, It would have for the Chargers to sign Cam, it would have had to been the right price too, right? Because I mean, they already have Taylor, and while he's not, I mean, he's never come close to winning an MVP in the league as a quarterback, right? So, and Cam has. So if you feel more confident bringing Cam in because you believe you have a team that can compete this year, and Justin Herbert can sit behind him and learn and watch and not get killed, and you know, and just be able to ease into the job, then it does kind of make sense. But financially, it would, I don't know. I mean, some of these quarterbacks that are veteran quarterbacks that we thought were going to take starting jobs, the Andy Daltons and the Jameis Winstons and those types of players, they're not signing huge deals. So it is, I guess, in the realm of possibility that they could have signed Cam and done this. It's just, I feel bad for Tyrod because I think he's capable. I don't think he's good per se, but I think he's capable.
Some would say serviceable.
Serviceable. Yes, that's the word. Yes, that's the word. So, yeah, no, I agree, though. I think it probably had a lot more to do with just wanting to ease Herbert in instead of just throwing him, you know, to the Wolves in his rookie season. So
it could also have to do with Easton Stick. I saw that same article mention Easton Stick, and it's like, why? Like,
yeah.
At this point, mentioning his name, I feel like, is almost insulting to him, just because, like, everyone understands he's never going to be relevant in the NFL. The best thing you can do for the guy is forget that he exists. And I'm not saying that to be offensive to him. I'm actually saying that because the more you mention him, the more people are going to, like we are talking now, are going to talk about him and talk about how he's basically never going to be relevant. So, like, just leave Easton Stick's name out of it for now.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed. So let's go ahead and move on here. We're going to get into our main event here, which isn't much of a main event, but this is something that I saw and I wanted to talk about today. And it has relevance to me personally in a rookie draft that started Saturday for me and has gone over the last couple of days. So here's our main event. Why does everybody hate Devontae Parker, Bobby? Michael Thomas included. And we're going to get into that. But why does everybody hate Devontae Parker?
You know, it's interesting. I think, so even before this past year, I think I knew the one Devontae Parker truther. And so my friend Zach Wilkins was saying, like, for years, he's like, Devontae Parker's going to break out. Devontae Parker's going to break out. And then this year happened, and he must have been doing, like, circles around his house and just going nuts. So I know at least one person who doesn't hate Devontae Parker. I actually personally don't hate Devontae Parker. You know, late breakouts do happen. It's unusual, but it does. And now he gets Tua, who, I know we've had discussions about this, but from an efficiency metric and all that other stuff, he had some of the most efficient and best college quarterback seasons of all time. And maybe he's not quite Joe Burrow in your opinion, but I think you'll agree he's still a very good quarterback. So that's going to be an upgrade for Parker, presumably. I like Parker. If I haven't personally seen hate on Parker besides the Michael Thomas stuff. And the thing with Michael Thomas, I don't know if your listeners or your Patreons know this. Michael Thomas, as much as I love him as a fantasy player, he is incredibly salty on Twitter all the time.
Like
If you just like sniff in the wrong direction with Michael Thomas, he's going to jump on you about it. So he's a great player and he's a great fantasy player. But on Twitter, he's just incredibly salty and like gets triggered by pretty much everything.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So let's, I have a lot to say on this DeVante Parker stuff, but let's talk real quick about the situation with him and Mike Thomas today. So there's a graphic on social media, I think it was Instagram maybe, and it was saying which is tougher, making a catch while guarded by Stephon Gilmore or breaking up a pass while guarding Michael Thomas. DeVante Parker comes out and selects A, which is making a catch while guarded by Stephon Gilmore, which he obviously knows. He plays him twice a year. And Michael Thomas, I mean, all he did, he literally put the letter A, and Michael Thomas like pops off like, for you, yes, go run numbers up, then you can talk, I lapped you, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to read. You can find it very easily on Twitter if you want to read exactly what.
About DeVante Parker being a first-round pick. Like, started yes. being like, I outproduced you, you're a first-round pick. Like, Michael yes. Thomas clearly has a chip on his shoulder still.
Well, and so, in the context of great players in professional sports leagues, okay, and this is a big topic of conversation right now. I don't know if you're watching it, and it's okay if you're not, but The Last Dance right now on ESPN, right, with the documentary on the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan and all of that, right? So I was thinking about this before we came on tonight, and I thought about Mike Thomas, and I had a reaction when I initially read this, and I've had a reaction at a couple of the things that he has said over the course of his, you know, his career here in the National Football League. Just, it just hits me wrong, right? Just, I mean, he's very, very salty, and he can't take any type of criticism without like responding, right? And it led me to think. So first of all, Michael Thomas he's probably the best receiver in the league right now. Top two or three, anyways, easily. And you know, so he's great. Like, as a player, he is fantastic, right? He stays out of trouble too, for the most part. I mean, he's, you know, we're talking about him lip service, right? It's not like he's going out and, you know, getting in trouble and with the law or,
yeah. The worst thing you can say about a football player is that they get salty on Twitter. They're doing pretty well.
Exactly. Exactly. So, but I was thinking about The Last Dance, and if Michael Jordan, we, you know, this gave us some insight into Michael Jordan, right? And the type of competitor he was and how he used to use any little thing, and he used to talk so much crap on the court. If social media was around in the 1990s the way it is now, and so universally accepted and used by pretty much everybody, right? I mean, Michael Jordan would have been doing this stuff every day, every
Jordan
single day.
Burying people on social media.
Absolutely. 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 So I don't want to come at Mike Thomas hard over this, because I think, again, I think some of these guys are just so driven that any little thing that they see as a slight. Now, we can look at that and say, well, that's petty, and that's, he's so salty. And it's true. It is petty, and he is salty. There's no doubt about it. But these guys are so driven competitively that I think they just, you know, it just sits wrong with them. And then they go out and catch, and then he goes out and catches 149 passes for over 1700 yards and is called one of the best receivers in the game. So I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I call it petty, but I actually can't hate on it. I was just talking about this earlier. All of the things that have basically become strengths for me were things that people made fun of me for. And I was like, all right, that's it. I'm going to prove you wrong. Yep. Cause I get that level of petty, and like, it's not the same thing, cause I'm not a pro athlete or anything like that, but like, public speaking skills, I've been made fun of. I worked on relentlessly so that no one would ever do that again. Mm-hmm. Another stupid one, and this is just for your listeners that also happen to like video games, was in high school. I played professionally in Super Smash Brothers Melee tournaments. And one of my friends would destroy me every time and talk so much trash to the point where I didn't have much of a life in high school. So I spent every single weekend watching like YouTube videos of other pro players studying videos of like my friend's play style, and to the point where I could play him like 50-50 and then I just talk the trash back. So I understand Michael Thomas, and I understand using that as motivation, because there's definitely something to be said for, like, even if people don't doubt you, pretending that they do, to use it as just to light a fire under yourself. So I'm no way saying it as a knock on him. It's just an acknowledgement of, if you say anything wrong or it could be perceived as wrong as Michael Thomas, you will hear about it.
You're going to hear about it. There's no doubt about it. Yep. So back to Devontae Parker real quick. So the reason this subject kind of came up for me today, so I'm in a rookie draft right now. Started on Saturday, and it's a 12-team super flex league. And I took over, I was part of a dispersal draft last off season. Got Saquon Barkley and a couple other nice pieces, but the team needs some work, right? So I'm trying to acquire draft picks. Devontae Parker was one of the guys that I had selected in the dispersal. And I started with the 110, and I knew it was, actually, I might have started with the 109. But look, I knew that I wasn't likely to get the 109 with Devontae Parker, okay? But I started there. So I offered every person between the 109 and the 207 Devontae Parker. The 207. Now, the 207, this draft was kind of wacky. Like, 207 ended up being Denzel Mims, and that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to get two of Higgins. Pittman? USC,
yep.
Right? Pittman, yeah. And Denzel Mims. I was trying to get two of those three. I only ended up getting Higgins with the 203. But, you know, and if I would have gotten a late first, I probably would have gotten, you know, maybe Justin Jefferson or Jerry Jeudy or somebody like that. But realistically, that was kind of overshooting. I mean, the goal when I started the process was trying to get two of those three, like, second tier wide receivers. So, And nobody, nobody wanted anything to do with him. So I was a little bit shocked based on the season that he just had. And look, I understand that he's 27. I understand that he has only had one season like that, right? I mean, the previous four were not good. But he was also with Adam Gase for those seasons. So I kind of forgive him for that. Like, it wasn't his fault. It wasn't all his fault anyways. So I don't know. It just hit me weird today. I felt like Devontae Parker deserved a little bit more respect in the dynasty community.
It might not be Devontae Parker hate, though, so much as it is just there's so much hype for this class. And I know a few podcasts have talked about it and people on Twitter have talked about it. But everyone, and I know Russ has even talked about this and had a tweet about it. Everyone is acting as if every single player in this class is going to hit and be like a top 30 to 40 dynasty asset almost immediately. So, you know, when you're talking about Mims, you're like, oh, that's the wide receiver one of the Jets who's going to have Sam Darnold throwing him passes for the next 10 years. How dare you offer me 27-year-old Devontae Parker for him?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that definitely is what it has to be. I just got to a point where it was like, okay, I went as far as until Mims got picked. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm not moving him now because, I mean, Tua's coming in there, right? And if they end up signing him, even if it's not like, I mean, it's not going to be a big money contract, but if they end up extending him or whatever for a couple of years here and he ends up being the wide receiver one there, or even the wide receiver two, if somebody else breaks out or if they get somebody in the draft next year or something like that, that's okay. Like, I think Devontae Parker can be a fantasy asset that can help teams moving forward. Again, I understand the reservations. It just took me back. It was more of a frustration thing on my part that I couldn't get a deal done, right? As opposed to you know, actually being upset about the value that I didn't end up getting. So
yeah, I did something similar with Jarvis Landry in one of my rookie drafts and was surprised when, like, someone wouldn't even trade me basically like an early second for Jarvis Landry. And then I just got to a point where I was like, well, you know what? You can't have him and Jarvis Landry is still great. So get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So let's go ahead. So first of all, I want to shout out Fantasy Twitter, Dynasty Twitter today. We put out, obviously, we do this a lot of weeks, but we put out for some listener questions, ask you guys for some listener questions and some trades and whatnot. And we got a ton of responses this week. So really appreciate that to everyone who sent in a question. We're going to go ahead and jump right into those, Bobby. Without a listener questions, because I'm tired and I've got a lot to do tonight because I'm hosting and it's crazy. So just bear with me. But let's go ahead and jump right into these. So again, great response. Really appreciate everybody. I want to get right to, since we talked about the AFC North earlier, I want to get right to, and because this is one of my mans. So Trader Joe, at Trader Joe, or at FF Trader Joe on Twitter, fellow Trade Addicts 3 fella, he's the dude that did all the DAP Networks graphics, all of my drop page, the FF Dino pod drops, all of the graphics for that Joe did. He does a lot of stuff on Twitter, but really talented graphic design stuff. So
he also knows all the best food places in New York City if you're ever visiting. Pro tip.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Oh, Dustin, that is a wonderful idea. We are definitely doing that for Trade Addicts Trades, just for the hell of it. So, Bobby, you're going to do the Trade Addicts Trades drop later the show. So mentally prepare for that. no pressure. But so Trader Joe, and he obviously, I mean, if you know Joe and you've talked to him on Twitter, I mean, big Browns fan, right? And I'm a big Steelers fan. So Joe sends this in. Who will win the AFC North in 2020, and why is it the Cleveland Browns? Joe. I don't think there's any way the Cleveland Browns win this division. I need to see the Cleveland Browns win 8 games before I can say that they are a competitor in this division. I'm sorry. There's no disrespect. Look, on paper, heading into last season, the Browns should have competed for the division. They didn't at all.
To be fair, Freddie Kitchens, that's pretty much
true. True. Absolutely. And I like the new system coming in. Sure. I mean, the new head coach and whatnot. I mean, I like the idea of the Browns moving forward. I think that they are a much more talented team than they've been in a long, long, long time. They have
Baker Mayfield is a better quarterback than he's getting props for in the community, I think.
I think so too. I'm not 100% sure, but I think so too. But I think that they have a lot more talent than they've had at any point in the last probably decade, at least, maybe longer. The problem here is the other teams in the division, and specifically, I'm not going to do the whole Steelers Browns little brother thing, but it's the Ravens. But you know, Bobby and I talked about this earlier in the show. The Baltimore Ravens are arguably the best team in the National Football League. The Chiefs are the best team right now because they won the Super Bowl and because they are very talented as well. Those are the top two teams in the league, in my opinion. And there's I mean, I don't see a way outside of an injury to Lamar Jackson that Cleveland or Pittsburgh, for that matter, and definitely not Cincinnati this year. I think they'll be markedly improved, but I don't think they'll compete for the division this year. It's just the North is the Ravens until further notice at this point, unless there's a major injury to Lamar Jackson. So
it is also interesting or cool though when you can say that Ben is arguably the worst quarterback in that division now. That just shows you how strong that division is on its way to becoming.
Yeah, for sure. And that has been the trend, right? I mean, the other three franchises in that division have their stud of the future or potentially have their stud of the future. You know, we're going to see with Baker. I think this is the year where he needs to show a step. I definitely mm-hmm. need to see that this year. But I also expect it to happen more than I don't, you know. Jackson's a star. And Joe Burrow, you know, we've had extensive conversations, Bobby, about Joe Burrow. But realistically, I think his floor is Andy Dalton. So worst case scenario, they're
that easily.
Yeah, they could be a competitive team, you know, for a playoff spot here in another year or two. So, but yeah, I mean, Ben, a healthy Ben prior to this injury, I think is still in the conversation as probably top two in the division. I mean, Lamar is impressive, man. And there's no way to not give him the respect he deserves now, in my opinion. You know, but yeah, I mean, Ben, an aging Roethlisberger with a major injury at that point in his career, and they clearly have no backup plan. I mean, they say they're comfortable with those guys, but they can't be. They have to be lying to themselves. I mean, you can't watch what you saw last year from the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterbacks not named Ben Roethlisberger and think that you have your future quarterback on that roster.
Yeah, there's no way they do. Especially, I mean, even just looking at any kind of stats without watching any of the games. So let's say you never watched a Steelers game last year. If you just looked at, and I watched a few at least, but if you look at the stats from Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges, it's ugly. It's just really, really ugly.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It was atrocious at times. And if you watch the games and you look at the stats combined, it was even worse. Trust me. I watched them all and it was not pleasant. So Joe, thank you for the question. I don't think it's going to be your Brownies this year, buddy. I think they're going to be better. I think they may finish. They have a chance to finish second in the division if they can beat the Steelers twice in a season, which they haven't done in two decades. But if not, you see what I did there, Bobby.
Had to drop that on them.
I had to. But no, I think the Browns will be right there neck and neck with Pittsburgh this year, pushing for second place in that division and maybe a wild card spot depending on how the rest of the, I mean, I think that's going to be tough too for the AFC North second place team to get in. Although they expanded this year too, didn't they? Yeah, they expanded. I think they expanded the playoff field. So Pittsburgh and Cleveland could potentially be in that conversation and be racing each other for maybe a wild card berth, depending on how things shake out in the conference.
Yeah, it'd be shocking to not see the Ravens win that division. I think you're right. It would take a Daxton injury or just like some act of God for them to not win.
Yep. Agree 100%. All right, so let's move on to another listener question here. So we have a couple that are non-football related. Let's get one of those out of the way. So Bobby is a foodie, kind of, right? Bobby's known for his food takes a little bit.
I guess that's accurate, or at least used to be.
So I don't know if you're going to be able to speak on either of these, but I'm going to ask anyway. So my boy, my spirit animal, Kamish McGriff, at Kamish McGriff on Twitter, asks, and this was directly at me, but Bobby, I want to hear your opinion to see if you've had either of these, and then if you have, which you prefer. But he asks, whitetail backstrap or elk tenderloin? So obviously, we're talking big game meat here, and McGriff and I are both outdoorsmen and do some hunting and fishing and whatnot, and eat game meat, so... he was directing this again at me, but Bobby, have you had whitetail or elk meat?
I've had elk meat. I don't think I've had whitetail.
Okay.
I had an elk based burger once. It was actually really, really good.
Yes.
So I can't say cause I haven't had the other one, but if you made me pick, I'd pick the elk since I've had it.
Nice. So I won't spend too long on this just because, again, it's non-football talk, but these are probably my two favorite strips of meat in the entire world. I love elk tenderloin and I love whitetail backstrap. I was raised on venison. So for me, venison is just what I know. Like it's familiar to me and I love it and I know how to cook it. Whitetail tends to be a little more gamey tasting than elk. Elk just tastes freaking delicious. Like I've never really met anyone that has eaten elk meat and not enjoyed it. It's extremely lean, very tender. It's just delicious. I cannot choose here. This is an impossible question for me because I love both of these cuts so much. So that's how I'm going to leave it. I love both of these cuts of meat. All of it, McGriff, is the answer. All of it. Give me all of it. So let's go ahead and move back on to a football question. And this is an interesting one. And this is one that I wanted to get into a little bit too. So we just got done talking very briefly about Joe Burrow. And this is going to lead into the conversation here for this particular question. And neither of these quarterbacks are Joe Burrow, but we'll get there eventually. So Eric John Flynn, at Eric John Flynn on Twitter, a friend of the show, states Teddy Bridgewater is ahead of Justin Herbert in this month's ADP. Why? Bobby, why is Teddy Bridgewater ahead of Justin Herbert?
Well, first of all, Eric is also a good friend of mine, and you should check out his show, My Dynasty Diary, that he's been doing with some different analysts. I think we talked about Teddy Bridgewater on the episode that I was on. But here's the thing about Teddy. When we saw him when he was healthy, he was a game manager, so I'm not super confident in his ability to be relevant for fantasy. But at the same time, if you're going to game manage, having guys like CMC and DJ Moore who excel in short games and can take those short games and turn them into long games or even touchdowns, those are the kinds of guys you want to surround yourself with. On the flip side, Justin Herbert has a lot of weapons to work with too. We talked about that briefly earlier. So if you're asking me, if I had Herbert and someone offered me Teddy Bridgewater, I would say no. On the flip side, I don't know that I would accept the trade in either direction, to be honest. It's one of those things where it's relatively close for me. And I know there's some people who are going to say, oh, well, Herbert's a rookie. He's younger, has so much time. But I do really like the fit of Teddy in Carolina. So I kind of understand both ways. But I think I'd give the slight lean to Herbert just because he is younger and the Chargers do have those weapons. But it's not one of those things where it's like, speaking of ADP, I have to do it. I do it every time ADP comes up for Superflex. It's not like, oh, Gardner Minshew is like down in like the 30s or late 20s, even though he's a starting quarterback and people who don't even have jobs are going ahead of him. I don't feel that strongly about it. It's like, yeah, maybe I slightly disagree, but if you post it on Twitter, I'm not going to fight you about it.
Yeah. So this one for me, so the initial question, why Bridgewater over Herbert in ADP? For me, I think the answer is Joe Brady. I mean, people saw what Joe Brady did with Joe Burrow and at LSU. You know, I mean, it's the greatest college season, arguably, that any collegiate quarterback has had in college football. Also in the toughest division in football and toughest conference in football. And yes, Bobby, I will acknowledge that Tua was tracking along the same lines for multiple seasons. We're not going to get into that discussion tonight, but I will oblige you. So Burrow's previous season was not bad, not great though. So Joe Brady comes in there, becomes a passing game coordinator for LSU, and they go absolutely bonkers. Okay, and he used their players, and they were good players, don't get me wrong, but he used their players to their strengths. He matched their players to their strengths. And I think that's why people are excited to Bridgewater. No, Teddy Bridgewater is not like a gunslinger who's going to just rip up the league. I don't believe that either. I do believe that he's capable of producing a season that we haven't seen from him yet with these weapons. DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, all the wide receivers, Curtis Samuel. They brought in Robbie Anderson. They have Ian Thomas. I mean, they're loaded at the skill position, or at least very talented at the skill position, depending on, you know, beyond CMC and beyond good grief.
More.
My brain just fart. Yes. So those guys are legit studs. Beyond that, they're very good players still. I mean, players that are more than capable of handling the jobs that they have on that team. So look, you know, do I think 3 years from now, I don't know. I mean, that's why, though. It's Joe Brady. If Teddy Bridgewater produces that season that he hasn't produced yet in this Joe Brady offense, they sign him to a three-year contract. They have a very friendly team out after 2 years, but it gives them time to see, is Teddy the guy? Because Teddy Bridgewater is still only 28 years old. So if he is the guy, he can be the long-term option there. But they have a couple of years here to figure that out, to see, okay, what is Teddy Bridgewater like with Joe Brady calling plays and running an offense? And if they like what they see, they can pick up the third year, and then they have, and you know, so they don't have to pay him for 3 years again. I mean, the cap numbers are friendly for a starting quarterback in the National Football League. So that's why I think he's ahead of Herbert. You know, we don't know that Justin Herbert's going to play this year. We talked about it earlier in the show. You know, are they going to bring him along slowly? Is it going to be a year? Is it going to be two potentially? I don't know. I doubt it, but, you know, but that's why I think people are just looking at what Brady did with Burrow, and they're hoping and projecting that maybe Teddy, you know, again, not a superstar level, but maybe he's going to put together a season that, you know, he never has to this point in his career and really be worth, you know, his ADP in drafts.
I would say that halfway into this season, I think we'll have an idea of how this looks, and the idea that it's close one way or the other will look ridiculous. Meaning, I think one of these two guys will pull very far away from the other guy, and I can't say who it will be, but I think by the point that Herbert has started or is starting a few games and midway through the season, when we've seen what Teddy is doing in this offense, we'll have a very good idea and their ADPs won't be so close to each other anymore one way or the other.
Yep. Yes, sir. It will be interesting to watch this one. I want to make a mental note of it and come back to it after the season or during the season and see where, you know, see how these guys are playing and what the opportunity's like, and then take a look at it again. All right. So we have another question here. So this is from our friend Andrew Hall FF at Andrew Hall FF on Twitter. So this is a trade question. So in a start 12, one quarterback PPR league, Andrew traded away the 111 and a 21 third for Beckham Jr. Is this a great trade or the best trade of all time? Please discuss. Now he did send the settings. It's like a one quarterback. You have to start three running backs, three wide receivers, two tight ends, and then there's three flex positions, I believe, three or four flex positions. So a lot of starting positions. In my opinion, Andrew, this is, I wouldn't say it's the greatest trade of all time, but certainly it is a slam dunk get for Odell Beckham Jr. That's a very small price to pay for a guy that has, you know, the talent and the capability that Odell has and has shown in the past. It's been a rough couple of years, but I would absolutely pay that every day of the week for Odell.
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I'd say I've definitely have seen better trades in terms of like, wow, I can't believe you got that value for that player, or I can't believe you got that player for that value, but it's still a great trade. Doesn't mean it's the best trade of all time, but it's a great trade. So well done, Andrew.
Yes, Andrew, nice job. So we have another one here. So this is more of a what kind of like a what would you do question. So this is from our friend Joseph Fry at JFry80 on Twitter. So this is a 12-team PPR league. I believe it's PPR. It actually doesn't say. 12-team league, one quarterback, two running backs, three wide receivers, a tight end, a super flex, and then it's a 2 point per reception tight end premium.
It must be PPR, because if you do 2 point,
right?
Then that's, yep. Just, yeah.
You are correct, Bobby. I think you're absolutely right to assume that. So, his team. So he gave a lot of information here, and this is good. So quarterbacks are Jared Goff, Matt Stafford, Ryan Tannehill. Running back, he has Chubb, Taylor, Geis, Howard, Kelly, Justin Jackson. Wide receiver, Michael Thomas, Cooper Kupp, Jarvis Landry, Jefferson, Mims, Samuel, Chenault, Preston. And then tight ends, he's got Everett, Ryan, and Njoku. So a little bit weak at tight end. And he's asking if he should potentially go after Noah Fant or Zach Ertz, because they're both on trade bait, and what would you give? So he's basically asking us to formulate a trade for him. Do you have any initial thoughts? I mean, as far as just going after a tight end, I think that's a good idea. Are you in agreement there, Bobby?
It's interesting. I'm not sure how I feel about this team, to be honest.
Okay.
The wide receivers are nice. However, that said, Jarvis Landry is his third wide receiver. And I know I love Jarvis Landry, but I know that he's had some complications with his surgery, which worries me a bit. And then he has essentially a bunch of rookies and Preston Williams, who's coming off an ACL injury, and Curtis Samuel, who's good, but he has CMC and DJ Moore on his team, who are going to be target hogs, essentially. Running back situation looks pretty good. Darius Geis worries me a bit. And then the quarterback situation, it's weird. Stafford was on track, as everyone knows, to be like light up the league essentially and be like a top five quarterback last year, but he did have the injury. Goff had a down year, and Tannehill was super efficient with his passes, but I'm not sure I really trust his quarterback room. So if I were him, I'm not sure that I'd be pushing in my chips to go for a tight end, or at least not a tight end that would mean that I was trying to contend this year, which at least Ertz does. So I like the move for Fant a bit more because it kind of lines up with his window, at least in my opinion, a bit more. Or even a guy like an Evan Engram, who both allows you to contend because if he stays healthy, he's dominant when he's on the field, as well as is a little bit younger than Ertz. So that's just my take. I don't think I'd go for Ertz. I'd go for Fant probably. And I would probably try to trade from what I perceive as, at least maybe not from an actual production point of view, but from a dynasty value point of view. He has some wide receiver depth from a value point of view to trade from. So if he could get a tight end for that and maybe a pick or something like that, that might be a move that I'd look to do.
Yeah, what we don't have here is what the other rosters look like, right, to kind of slot him in as far as whether or not he can be a contender or not. I mean, I think that there are some pieces on this team that would lead me to believe that he can be. And I definitely think that upgrading the tight end position is one of the top priorities here. Mm-hmm. The question I have is I, you know, like you said, there's a couple other moves I think that would maybe need to be made to make this a real strong contender. I mean, this could be a playoff team if the chips fall right. But I don't know that it's a top four team,
as sneaking into the playoffs and getting bounced type team.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think for this particular team, going after Noah Fant makes a little bit more sense than Zach Ertz at the price. But I also like your idea of maybe going after a tight end, maybe that hasn't been established as a stud yet. Guys like Gesicki.
My favorite target because he was breaking out late last season.
Yep.
And he and Fitzpatrick had a connection. And then even if Fitzpatrick were to go away, theoretically, as much as we may like to make jokes about Fitzpatrick, I don't think anybody's arguing that at this point in his career, he's probably going to be a better quarterback than Tua.
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, I agree with Gesicki. I mean, he's a Penn State guy, so I'm obviously all over that. But, Ian Thomas is another one. Now you do have Samuel, although, that wouldn't concern me. He's kind of more wide receiver depth on your team. I mean, you're probably not starting him most weeks. So, if you could pick up an Ian Thomas in a deal,
Samuel could even be the guy that he could move for an Ian Thomas type.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. But yeah, those kind of those mid-range tight end targets that are kind of up and coming as opposed to guys that are already established, I think is probably a smarter move for this particular team. All right, let's jump to we had another one here that was a non. Oh, yes, beer. Let's talk about beer because I like talking about beer. So my guy, Chris Moxley, who I talk with all the time about beer, he drinks some amazing beers that I've never had in my life and really want to. He's down in the Carolinas somewhere, I believe.
Yeah, he's a fellow DJ Moore stan. It was like, yes. When I wrote my article, it was like me and him hyping DJ Moore and then everyone else kind of followed suit.
Yes, absolutely. And so he's down in the Carolinas and that's a very big hotbed for craft breweries are everywhere anymore, but the Carolinas are good. There's a lot of really good stuff down there. So Chris asks, why are IPAs so tasty? first and foremost, see, now this is a professional right here, Chris, right? So he asks, why are IPAs so tasty? And then he brings in a Penn State player here kind of to stroke the ego and get me going, right? So why is Allen Robinson so underrated still? And then he asked for some of our favorite post-hype sleepers. So I'll tell you what we'll do here. I will address the IPAs. You can chime in, and then I'll let you go first with the Allen Robinson stuff. How's that?
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay. The only thing I will add is,
yes.
So I recently tweeted that I graduated grad school, and this is maybe a story for another time. It's not a super long story. But one of the things that grad school ruined for me was beer. I'd never gotten sick from drinking before. And it's not that I drank too much. It's that I went out with some of my grad school friends and one of them offered to buy me a drink. And unfortunately, they brought me back a drink from a bad tap. So I got violently sick and now have an aversion to beer and have since only drank whiskey. So I am 100% only dark liquor. So I can't really, I mean, I did drink and I did drink IPAs. IPAs were never my favorite personally, I'm sorry to say. I used to drink much darker beers generally, but yeah, so I'm not the person to ask about beer. So I will let Brian talk about beers.
Well, I love beer, and craft beer is amazing. I love IPAs. Why are they the best? They are the best because they leave the little suds every gulp that you take. They leave the suds on the sides of the glass. And I know there's a name for that. And again, my brain is not functioning properly tonight, so I'm not going to remember what the name of that is. But yes, that's why. Because it, as you drink it, it just leaves the little sud rings the whole way down the glass. No, there. IPAs are one of those things. It's an acquired taste. It's, you know, the bitterness. Some people don't like the bitterness of IPAs. For me, you know, I just love the crispness and the smoothness of an IPA. Beer drinkers are funny because they're very hostile in terms of like people that like IPAs get mad when other people don't, and people who you know don't like IPAs are like, IPAs are freaking terrible and blah blah. Just everybody should enjoy the beer that they like or the drink that they like if it's not beer.
Yeah,
let's all live in harmony, people. Okay.
One of the things I found about drinking whiskey and whiskey drinkers is as long as you're not like drinking super cheap whiskey and talking about how great it is, essentially, everyone's cool with like whatever bottle or style of whiskey you like, and we'll even like try to introduce you to other types of whiskey. It's a much more inviting drinking community than beer drinkers, apparently.
Yeah. Well, you guys are all drunk too when you're drinking whiskey. So you just, you know, it's like, oh yeah, come have this one. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. So Allen Robinson, I'm interested, Bobby, on your take on Allen Robinson, because obviously this is a guy that's a Penn State guy too, and a guy that I'm passionate about. So I'd like to hear your stance on first, if you think Allen Robinson is still underrated, and then if so, why?
Yeah. After the season he just had, and I can't recall, this is just me talking right out of my ass. Sorry for the language there, but I think he moved up pretty drastically in ADP. Maybe he didn't, but I think he did because I think people started to take notice of, hey, this guy is producing with something called Mitchell Trubisky at quarterback. So, you know, even bad quarterbacks can make one guy at least fantasy relevant. I think there is some general thought out there of, hey, the Bears suck, so everyone on their team must suck. But the thing is, like, and I hate to do this to myself, but I have to. Even if you look at like the Jaguars, Blake Bortles years, there was always like one or two wide receivers who actually were top 24, sometimes even like top 16 guys. So they can support that. And now they have Nick Foles, who is probably a better quarterback than Trubisky. I'm actually not fully convinced that he is, but it either he's a better quarterback than Trubisky, or he might, you know, light that Michael Thomas type fire under Trubisky and make him a better quarterback, which will hopefully help Allen Robinson. So I don't mind him. It's all just price dependent. If his price really rose a lot, then I'm not interested. But actually, maybe it didn't rise that much, especially if Chris is asking this question. I know Chris is pretty attuned to ADP, so it's probably the case that he's still being underrated.
So we're going to play a game. I love this game. It's my favorite game that Russ and I play. So we're going to play a game real quick, and it's just either or. It's who would you rather have? Okay. And it's with people around Allen Robinson's ADP. So it's not, you know, there's going to be some that are 10 to 12 spots higher, around higher, and then there's going to be some that are around lower. And I want to see what you think about these guys. Okay.
Sure.
So this is going to be pulled from May's DLF Superflex ADP for May. So Allen Robinson or CeeDee Lamb?
I gotta go with CeeDee Lamb.
Okay. Allen Robinson or Calvin Ridley?
Calvin Ridley.
Okay. Allen Robinson or Keenan Allen?
That's tough. And this is coming from someone who loves Keenan Allen. And I mean, like, Keenan Allen is one of my favorite fantasy players of all time. That might be a relative push. I'd still lean towards Keenan Allen just because he has the consistency thing going, but it's closer than the other two, even though it shouldn't be. Keenan Allen should run away with it. It's just the other two I really like and have age on their side.
Sorry,
You're just lost waiting for me.
Allen Robinson or DK Metcalf?
DK Metcalf.
Allen Robinson or Courtland Sutton?
Sutton.
Allen Robinson or Cooper Kupp?
Man,
Okay, so here's what I've gathered from this game. Bobby hates Allen Robinson too, Chris. Just like the rest of the world, apparently.
It's not that, but you're listing really good wide receivers that I like.
Okay, so let me
price range, then I'm not that interested.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so let me here's my take on Allen Robinson. And obviously, again, look, I'm fully aware of my Penn State bias. There's no doubt about it. Okay. I mean, I like Penn State players for the most part. I'm trying to be as objective as possible here. There are a couple of these guys I think I can certainly understand an argument for over Allen Robinson. You know, a guy like a guy like Sutton, I can understand. I wouldn't do that, but I can understand that. Even Lamb, I mean, if you put Allen Robinson across from the 107, I'm taking Allen Robinson every single time. And that's about where CeeDee Lamb was going. So when you put the name to the pick, it's a little bit closer for me. Here's where I lose you, or where you lose me, I guess. Calvin Ridley.
Mm-hmm.
Calvin Ridley is 25 years old, December of 94. Allen Robinson is August of 93. So a year and a half difference in age. Okay. Ridley is a wide receiver two on his team behind one of the greatest wide receivers in football of all time in football. Who's still only 31 years old. And look, I get it. From a fantasy football perspective, we want to kill these guys at 30 years old or 28 years old, some of them. So, I mean, Bobby, I know you're not typically one of those guys. I mean, you're not an ageist. You like veteran players for the most part. I mean, we've had those conversations before.
Yeah, it depends. And this is a different thing that I could rant about. But basically, I like veterans, but I recognize that other people don't. So if I'm playing players that I like, plus how they'll be valued by my league mates, that's what makes me lean towards younger guys occasionally. Because there is this concept of essentially perceived value and actual value. And a lot of times veterans like Keenan Allen, for example, have a lot more actual value than trade value. And the ideal is to find both. And so sometimes that's why I do lean towards guys that are slightly younger as a tiebreaker. Not because I necessarily value it, but because I think my trade partners will.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's absolutely true. I mean, that the idea of, you know, actual production value versus trade value is very, I mean, that's a very real argument to have and a concept to understand. You know, we've talked on the show in the past about Julio Jones specifically and the actual value that he provides versus the trade value that he's provided over the last couple of years as he's aged and hit that 30-year-old, you know, mark in terms of his age. Some of these guys, I feel like we're projecting some of these guys to have Allen Robinson type seasons. Allen Robinson's already done this twice with like not good quarterbacks. I mean, the two
Bortles.
Yeah, Bortles and Mitch Trubisky are the two quarterbacks that he's played with in the National Football League, and he's put up two of the types of seasons with those guys that you're hoping you're getting from a guy like Courtland Sutton, a guy like, you know, Cooper Kupp, who is the same age, actually older, I think. He might be the same age. He and Allen Robinson, I think, are the same age. You know, and Calvin Ridley, who, I mean, 65 catches and 900 yards both seasons so far, and that's nothing to scoff at. I mean, that's good. The touchdowns are there. I mean, he scores touchdowns. He's 17 touchdowns in 2 years. But, you know, I just don't see the jump for Ridley coming as long as Julio Jones is there. And I think Julio Jones is there for another two to three years.
So Allen Robinson finished last season, at least in 0.5 PPR leagues, as a top 10 wide receiver, right?
Right.
Calvin Ridley finished as the wide receiver 23.
Okay.
However, in terms of points per game, it was much closer than that, where Ridley was behind him by like 0.2.
Okay.
Or maybe a little less than that, or a little more. But because Ridley missed, I think it was two or three games, he did finish much lower. So while I understand what you're saying, if Ridley, and injuries do matter, I'm not saying they don't, because they add up over time. But if he finished out the season, I think that it'd be a much closer conversation, because a lot of times people look at just the overall season finish instead of adding context like, oh, Ridley was actually pacing for a top 12-ish wide receiver finish, but got injured.
Yeah. No, and you're absolutely right. And you do have to look at those things. And I wasn't. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. On a per game basis, you know, they may have been, it sounds like they were closer on a per game basis. I just feel like as long as Julio's there, it caps his ceiling. And by the time Julio is gone, where that cap is kind of blown off the top, Ridley's 28, 29 years old, and we're going to start talking about him like an old man too. So that's the only
Ryan might be towards the end of his career at that point too.
Right. So that one particularly worries me. It's fine. I mean, that's certainly fine. I mean, these are all good players that deserve to be in the same range as far as your drafts go. And you pick the guys that you like in those range when you're comparing them. I don't know if he's undervalued based on the guys around him. I don't know that he's undervalued anymore.
Yeah, I hesitated on a Cup, even though I actually like Cup better, just because I see a scenario where, based on his contract, Cup is not a Ram next year or the year after that, and that worries me.
Yeah, yeah, I agree there too. I'm a little bit concerned just with that Rams offense in general.
Yeah, as long as Cup's a Ram, I'm okay with it, because he's basically like, if Jared Goff were Linus, then Cup would be the blankie that Linus always carries around. But as soon as he's not paired with Goff anymore, that definitely worries me, or if it happens.
Yeah. All right, so let's move off Allen Robinson before I fight somebody. I'm just kidding. but we are going to move right into this is James Katulis, James the Brain, asking at underscore James the Brain, my fellow co-host over at the Superflex Super Show, asking me if Saquon Barkley looks better in a Penn State jersey or New York Giants one. Bobby, this is he's now, you have to realize what he's doing here is he's trying to hit us again.
Yeah.
Yes, he's absolutely. He's a bully and a troll and all of it combined. And I love him to death. But he's absolutely trying to pit us against one another. We will answer this with one word or two.
And I can answer it without dividing us, which is Saquon looks good in whatever jersey he's in.
Yes! Amen. End of story.
As long as it's not a Cowboys jersey.
There you go. There you go. Either is the answer here. He looks both. He looks good in both. So okay, so that one was easy. Let's see here. What else do we have? Oh, this is a good one. So Norman Bunn at Battle for Supremacy. At Battle for Supremacy. Yeah, it's SUPREMCY. How far apart are DJ Chark and Terry McLaurin? He tried to acquire Chark and offered McLaurin and a third, 2021 third, and was considering offering a second as well. The more research he did, felt like I should sit tight with McLaurin. He's win now and thought a package for McLaurin or a package with McLaurin plus to add the final piece. Thoughts on Chark and McLaurin and this particular type of deal?
Yeah, so I talked about this on Twitter. I was recently in definitely not a startup, in definitely not a new league. And I was on the clock and Keenan Allen had just gone shortly before my pick, which I was really mad about. I was definitely tilting a bit, but I saw DJ Chark and Terry McLaurin there. So I had this exact decision to make. And there were some other guys around that were maybe in the conversation, but those two were going to be my pick. And I ultimately went with Chark. Part of it was that I thought he was more valuable than McLaurin in the eyes of the community. Mm-hmm. And part of it was that I just didn't have any shares and thought it would be good to grab him. Funny enough, you mentioned Dustin earlier. Mm-hmm. I ended up, after the startup, pulling off a big trade. I forget exactly what all the pieces were, but I know one of the main pieces was that I gave him Shark and ended up with Keenan Allen because I was still tilting about it and was like, no, I need to trade for Keenan Allen immediately because how dare you, Dustin? And
couldn't stand the disrespect.
Yeah, it was a huge trade. I remember that much. And then almost immediately after, I like reshaped my wide receiver room entirely and ended up with Deebo Samuel. But part of it was what I was talking about a second ago, where I took Shark with this idea that, hey, you know, if I add to Shark, I can probably trade him for a guy like Keenan Allen. Or if I take Shark, I can flip him for more than I can probably flip McLaurin for. And I was looking up their per game stats and things of that nature. It was pretty even tiebreak. I was even considering writing an article about it. I still might. But a major part of it was just, I guess, a lack of faith in Dwayne Haskins. And looking, I did some research for a Gardner Minshew article versus Drew Locke. And Minshew was very good as a rookie by at least a statistical measure. And watching the film, he's generally pretty good. He does need to work on his turnovers. But he was, at the very least, a starter-worthy quarterback. And Shark is probably going to be his wide receiver one. So I was definitely interested in that. And this was before the rookie draft. So that was before I even knew Shenault was there to take some maybe attention off Shark and help him with the defense. But I'd still make that same decision.
Yeah, so these guys are interesting to me. I mean, I think as far as where they're valued, I don't think I'd necessarily add to either one of these guys mm-hmm. to get the other. They're both guys that, depending on what happens in this next season, will either drastically improve their value or drastically decrease their value. I really believe that. I mean, if these guys don't take another step, then I think they're going to lose value. And again, if they do take that next step, I mean, they have a chance to vault, you know, up into the conversation with the guys we were talking about just a minute ago, the Allen Robinsons, the, you know, Cooper Cups, the Keenan Allens, all of those players. So I personally like McLaurin's talent better, I think, but it's real close. I mean, they both are going to have the opportunity. And I think they're both talented enough to succeed. We'll just have to see what their quarterbacks do. And I think really, Bobby, you know, you kind of made that argument. And I think that's what this is going to end up coming down to here, at least for the next season. Beyond that, we'll see what happens. I mean, if the quarterback play is bad in either one of these places, we're talking about two of the franchises that could be drafting Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields in next year's draft. So this is a big year for both of these guys, I think. And I think a lot of it will depend on the quarterback play.
And I looked up the trade with Dustin just real quick. It was DJ Shark, Brandon Cooks, Mike Williams, and Hayden Hurst for Keenan Allen, Marquise Brown, Christian Kirk, and OJ Howard. And then I took Marquise Brown immediately and flipped an additional 2021 second that I got in the draft from trading down and turned that into Deebo Samuel.
Beautiful. I really like that Deebo trade a lot. Yeah,
so do I. I was glad that Chris Allen took it. Shout out to Chris, and also sorry for the weird trade flex on you there, but had to be done.
Just flex, Bobby. You got to show me the guns now, right? There you go. Let's get a couple more listener questions in, and then we're going to go. We only have one Trade Addicts trade tonight. So we'll go to that here in just a minute, but let's get these last couple questions in. So Robbie McPhee, another friend of the show at Robbie McPhee 21 on Twitter. He completed a trade last week. It's a pretty big rebuild, 12 team, half point PPR, super flex tight end premium league. He sent Christian Kirk, Darius Geis, and Jalen Hurts. He received CeeDee Lamb, Marlon Mack, and he and James Washington. And he also said that he's a JT owner. So he locked up the Colts backfield and got Lamb and James Washington for Christian Kirk, Darius Geis, and Jalen Hurts. What do you think on this one?
I'm a little torn. I think part of it is a belief in Kirk, even though Hopkins is there. I don't love Geis, but I also recognize that he still has some major upside if he can stay healthy. If a lot of things break right for Geis, he can be a major fantasy asset. And then Jalen Hurts going to Philadelphia broke my heart because I thought that he would go somewhere where he'd have a great opportunity. That said, as much as I like Carson Wentz, he does get injured all the time, so it's not out of the realm of possibility that Jalen Hurts starts a significant number of games for the Eagles. you know, CeeDee Lamb is a great piece, but he's at the moment stuck behind Amari Cooper, Ezekiel Elliott, and maybe Michael Gallup, even though Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. And I know, you know, we saw with A.J. Brown, talent does tend to rise to the top. So that could happen with CeeDee, which is why I still like him. Marlon Mack, to me, I think I once called him Marlon Meh, and that was a tad too early. But now, having had that opinion of him before and knowing that Taylor is there, I just don't see him having fantasy value, or at least more than being like, this is a roster clogger unless you're in like a 16 team and you really need depth. I just don't want Marlon Mack on my roster. I do like James Washington still, even though they drafted Claypool and they have all these wide receivers. They have Deontay Johnson and Juju. James Washington's still a guy who could be their wide receiver too. I'm not saying he will be, but he could be. And so I like his upside, but I feel like when I'm making trades, I like to feel like I'm getting the most upside in the deal. And through the combination of pieces, I feel like Robbie gave up the most upside. Maybe he got a lot in CeeDee, because if CeeDee has a good rookie year, he can probably sell him for more than what he gave up in this deal. But ultimately, I think I prefer the other side. And I did just want to say real quick, Robbie joined us on draft night on the Superflex show.
Yes.
And he did a great job. I also felt bad because I literally watched his heartbreak on
with the Packers.
Yeah, you know, he's a Packers fan. So we watched his heartbreak on the live stream and just dead silence. And he's a Canadian, so he like wouldn't curse, even though we could tell he really needed to. But great job, Robbie. And just wanted to shout you out again for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Robbie's a great guy. I really want to talk to him about hockey sometime. I actually hadn't been aware for some reason, which is dumb of me, but I hadn't been aware that he was Canadian. So, I mean, Canadians all like hockey. I've never found one that doesn't. So I'm not stereotyping whatsoever there. No, but seriously, I would love to talk some hockey and some, I know he's a big Raptors fan too. So, we'll have to get into that sometime. Robbie, that would be fun. We got to get you on the show, man. Russ, if you're listening to this, Robbie McPhee, we got to get him on the show. No, but thanks for the question, bud. I think for me, you know, I think Lamb is the best player in the deal, so I'd feel good about that. I mean, anytime you land the best player in the deal, and yes, Bobby, I know he's a rookie, but I still think he's going to end up being the best player in this deal, moving forward, even if he doesn't end up being a superstar in year one. Having said that, I think I'm with you in the sense that, so there's more risk on the other side. But if these guys hit, I'm a big Darius Geis guy. If Darius Geis can just stay healthy, and I know it's a big ask, but if he can just stay healthy, I think he provides enough value on that side that with Christian Kirk's and a quarterback in a super flex league, in Jalen Hurts, you know, I think that side has a chance to end up being the better side in this. I don't think it is today. I think the Lamb side is probably the better deal, the better side today. But if Geis can stay healthy, especially, and if Kirk can just be okay, he doesn't have to be great. Just be serviceable as a wide receiver too, or something like that. You know, then I think the value can end up being on that side. All right, last trade. Speaking of hockey, geez, we got fantasy hockey trades. At FNTSYHCKY trades on Twitter. Which strategy is better in Dynasty? Elite running backs with mediocre wide receivers or elite wide receivers with mediocre running backs? It depends is the answer. But Bobby, I would like to hear your take on this one first.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. So I've always traditionally been a wide receiver guy where I like to build my teams around wide receivers and then figure out running backs through rookie drafts if I can, especially the past few classes. That has worked out pretty well. However, in a few startups recently, I have tried just to be different, going running back a little bit earlier than I normally would, and even taking two running backs a little bit earlier than I normally would. And the thing is that wide receiver is so deep that you can do that and get some real studs at running back and then still have a pretty good wide receiver group. You won't have that top of the top of talent, but you'll have those wide receiver two types. So it really depends. The thing that you learn playing fantasy or dynasty enough is any strategy pretty much can work as long as the right person is trying to make it work. And sometimes no strategy can work. Sometimes that guy that doesn't pay attention whatsoever, which starts his starting lineup every week, somehow wins, and it makes no sense. And that's the game that we all play and love and put way too much thought into. So as Brian said, it depends.
Yeah. And I mean, realistically, that's the answer. I think for me, it's the elite. I tend to build my teams around elite running backs and more mediocre wide receivers. I just think there's more good wide receivers than there are good running backs. And look, obviously that's contrary to zero running back. And there's a lot of people that really believe in that, that idea. I've had more success in building around elite running backs. Now, here's the thing though. It's young elite running backs, right? So we're talking like first 3 years of their career. Beyond that, I think they're tradable assets. I mean, I think I like trading running backs in their mid 20s for a wide receiver in their mid 20s and maybe a pick where I can grab another rookie running back or something like that, and kind of rehashing that cycle over and over where I can. So that's what I'd say on that one. But the cool thing about this game is that you can build good dynasty rosters a number of different ways. You really can. Even in super flex leagues. And I know this is probably going to piss off our guy, John Hogue, but, even in Superflex League, I've seen some pretty nice teams that haven't prioritized Superflex or the Superflex position and quarterbacks. You don't see it very often, but you do see it. And that's cool. That's cool about this game. That's a cool thing about this game. And it's, you know, that's why I'm in so many leagues. I can try so many different things. So I'm in way too many leagues, man. It's ridiculous how many I'm in this year. But all right. Again, to our listeners that send in questions tonight, thank you guys. We really appreciate when you do that. It helps us out. And hopefully it helps you out. I mean, that's the purpose too, is just to be able to answer your questions and maybe give you some insight to help you out with your rosters. So before we get into the Trade Addicts trades, where we get Bobby to do our drop,
so for people who don't know, during the coronavirus, I've been staying at my parents' house, and I think everyone's trying to sleep right now. So I'm trying to be quiet. So it's great that I have to try to do this thing where you essentially shout into the microphone. Once again, thank you, Dustin.
Hey, you can do it your way, Bobby. If there's a different way to do it, like a creepy old man way where you're like down like this, giving the Trade Addicts trades or something, you know, you can do it, man. I don't care. You do you.
I'll save this, but I can do a really good Patrick from SpongeBob voice.
Oh, nice. 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 Okay, we're going to get right to it. Really quick before we do, just want to mention again, we've mentioned on the last couple shows, so the DLF Champions Cup Series, Safe Leagues and DLF have partnered up with Commish Extraordinaire Scott Fish to create the new DLF Champions Cup Series. It's a really cool format, guys. I mean, I am playing in one of these, and the format is just really cool. It's a Superflex tight end premium, which is 2.0 premium, 2 point per reception premium for tight ends, with points and payouts awarded every year. Bonuses every third year, cumulative points go up against a larger field to see who wins the Champions Cup. The Champions Cup is a $1,000 grand prize. Safeleagues.com/ DLF Champions Cup or something like that. I do this every single week. I got to get my crap together with this. So it's safeleaguesffl.com/DLF. So go check that out, guys. There's a bunch of them. There's still a bunch open right now. I think we're in the 16th series, up to the 16th series now. And these leagues are awesome. There's four like leagues per series. And then the cumulative points you're running against your series. So, but you're playing every year in your division, which is like your separate league. It's really cool format. So go check it out. Wanted to make sure we shouted that out tonight. And Bobby, let's go ahead and hit him with a Trade Addicts trades.
Sure. So I have one line I have to say to get into the Patrick voice.
Okay.
Which is mayonnaise an instrument? Trade Addicts trades.
There you go.
Or if you want me to do like the Brian version, it's Trade Addicts trades.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Dustin, take some notes there in the chat. I love you. Don't be mad. All right. So this is,
by the way, Dustin was DMing me this whole time, like sending, he didn't quite send the you're welcome gift, but I think he was close. He kept saying like, you're welcome for that. And just like taunting me this whole time. So there you go.
There you go. Right back at you. All right. So this is a Trade Addicts 2 trade. So Trade Addicts leagues, 12 team PPR, super flex, tight end premium, 1.75. And there's some return yards that I don't really pay attention to and probably should. So this trade is interesting. I like this. So Sterling Shepard for Taysom Hill and JJ Arcega-Whiteside. Bobby, thoughts?
This is going to sound biased because his is the only jersey that I own, but this is pretty easily the Sterling Shepard side for me. And the reason why is if you read my piece on Daniel Jones, it's clearly very late here and I am losing it, but Daniel Jones, you will see that he was actually a pretty good quarterback for a rookie as well. I know it showed up in fantasy where he was almost a QB1 in points per game. When he started, he pretty much was a QB1. Everyone's all over Darius Slayton, which I'm not saying they shouldn't be because they had some chemistry, but Sterling Shepard did miss a good amount of games because of concussion issues. And I understand people are worried about that. However, he is a great route runner and he has a very legitimate chance to be the Giants wide receiver one. And if he is, that means that he's going to be much more valuable than what you're getting on the other side. Personally, I can't see ever starting Taysom Hill in my super flex spot. I just can't. And I don't think he's ever going to be the actual starter for the Saints. I think it's much more likely that it's Winston or someone else next year. And so unless you're playing in one of those leagues, and by the way, this is a slight rant, but their ESPN, I think, and some other leagues have started allowing it so that Taysom Hill can be in like a regular flex spot. If he's listed as a quarterback on the team's roster, I don't care. Like, I know sometimes people are like, oh, well, he lined up like this at a tight end running back. I don't care. If the team lists them as a particular position, that is the position they play for fantasy. And if you're trying to get around that, it's just wrong. That's just how I feel about it. You're just wrong. And those points you earned are wrong. And if you earn a championship that way, it has to have like an asterisk next to it forever.
So I'm good with asterisks as long as I have the trophy or the ring or the money or whatever. I will say that. But no, yeah, so first of all, I agree, with the positional stuff. It just opens a Pandora box because then you're getting into like McCaffrey and guys that are running backs that are more receivers than they are running backs. And,
same argument, Le'Veon Bell should have been listed as a wide receiver.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then as far as the trade goes, I'm absolutely with you here. It's the Shepherd side for me. And look, I don't think there's a position group that benefited more from this draft by not adding a player than the pass catchers in New York.
And they addressed their O-line, giving him more time to hit them.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Danny Dimes was playing pretty well at the end of the last season. I mean, I think he at least showed some stuff to inspire a little bit of confidence moving forward here. And they have weapons, obviously Ingram at tight end, obviously Barkley at running back, and then those wide receivers, Slayton and Shepard. I think both of those guys have a chance to really take off this year with Daniel Jones back there. And Shepard has been good when he's been healthy. I mean, that's the thing. He's been banged up so much, with concussions and with, other injuries, leg injuries and different things that, he hasn't been out there. And when he is out there, he's not 100%. When he's been healthy, he's been good. I mean, he's been pretty, pretty good. So
as a rookie, he had a streak of like, it was either basically every game he had 50 yards or a touchdown.
Yep.
And then it fell apart when he got injured, but that streak went on for a while. And he was like one of the few players in the league that had a streak like that going for a number of games. So Sterling Shepard's great. But I am also a very biased source because as I said, he is the only jersey that I own.
Yeah. Nice. Nice. Well, I'm in agreement. I think it's Shepard on this one. And so, as Russ always says here, that's the end of our show sheet. So that's going to be the end of the show tonight. But before we get out of here, a couple of things. First and foremost, want to give Bobby the opportunity. If you don't know where this guy is, get with the program. I mean, Bobby's everywhere. You should be following him already on Twitter and on his other platforms. You know, follow all of his work. Bobby's one of the best guys in this business. There's no doubt about it, from a personal standpoint and also from a writing and informational content standpoint. Bobby's one of the best. So, Bobby, thank you for coming on the show again. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Please let the folks know where they can find you and your work.
Sure. And I appreciate the kind words. I don't know how true they actually are, but I appreciate it. You can find me at Rec Fantasy. I think I'm like contractually obliged at this point to say I'm not a Twitter tough guy, despite what you might hear from other people. We are bringing back the Zuperflex pod. Actually, this week we are recording our first episode in a while.
Yes.
We'll have to see. And by we, I mean myself and Matt Price. You can find him at Matt Price FF on Twitter. He makes it pretty easy for you. And it's, we'll see if we're going to keep it up regularly just because I'm starting a new job, but I would like to. So it's going to be our weird brand of quarterbacks and animals. And then, as always, you can find my work on Dynasty League Football. And really appreciate you guys having me on. I will add one last time. Fantasy Timeline, you're now on the clock. My DMs are open.
Beautiful, beautiful. Bill, Josh, get this man on the show. So before we get out of here, a couple more things. And this is the worst part for me, is going through the plugs for all the merch and stuff. I'm just terrible at this. I've got to improve, but bear with me as I do it. So I don't have them on tonight because I forgot. I was doing all my hosting stuff and I forgot to put my wristbands on. So we have the Trade Addicts Podcast wristbands. $5 each, $2 of each purchase goes to Fantasy Cares. Just hit me up in DMs on Twitter or Russ at Dynasty Outhouse. Either one of us will get you one of those. Shipping right now is a little bit of a mess just because nobody's leaving their house to go ship bracelets right now. But we will get them out to you eventually if you do order those. Also, we have ffpodshirts.com. There's all kinds of new stuff over there. Obviously, we've got the Trade Addicts Pod. We've got Dynasty Diagnostics. We've got Coast to Coast Scouting. We've got we have the Superflex Super Show. We have, God, don't let me forget somebody. We obviously have the new Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network stuff over there. We have the Fantasy Timeline stuff. Brand new stuff for them, and the Dynasty Junkie shirts and stickers as well. Tons of good stuff over there. Top Shelf DFF is over there as well. And their stuff. Gosh, I hope I didn't miss anybody. If I missed somebody, I am so sorry. I apologize. I love you all.
I'm on there right now. It looks like you have it covered.
Okay, sweet. Awesome. Our patrons. We have a couple of our patrons in our chat tonight, chatting back and forth with us and watching us live as we record the show. That's a benefit for our members in our $2 and $5 tier of our patron page, patreon.com/TradeAddictsPod. Dollar tier, $2 tier, $5 tier. You get different things with those tiers. But again, if you do the $2 tier, at least you can watch our show as we're recording it. The $5 tier gets you into our Cool Kids Club group chat on GroupMe that is fantastic and is self-sustaining. Russ and I are in and out of there as far as when we interact. I mean, obviously, we interact quite a bit in there, but those guys sustain the conversation regardless of whether we're in there or not. So it's a fantastic group of very knowledgeable people, very nice people. So if you're interested in that, hit us up on Patreon. Yeah, and thanks for listening, guys. We really appreciate our listeners, and sometimes we don't take the time to thank you guys for tuning in and listening to the show. We really appreciate it. Russ and I love doing this. We'd be doing it if there was nobody listening, but we like doing it a lot more when there are people listening. So thank you guys for listening to us. Again, check out all the new shows over at the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network. Yeah, and we're the Addicts, and we're out.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast. Please remember to follow our hosts at Dynasty Outhouse and at Brian Barr FF. Follow the pod at Trade Addict Pod. Please review, subscribe, and and rate the podcast. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.